when you finally crawled into bed last night, did it take you ages to nod off? Or maybe you woke up at 2 a.m. with your mind racing? Or maybe you share a bed with someone who snores and you can't remember the last time you got a decent night's sleep. Well, as well as being frustrating, a poor night's sleep in midlife could mean an early exit from the workforce. Researchers in Finland studied the sleep habits of people over 50, and they found that disrupted sleep could mean a shorter working life. And it's thought to be the first study that's looked at this connection between midlife sleep and how long people remain in the workforce. So let's talk about what you can do about it. But tell me, I'd love to know if your sleep has changed after 50. What is keeping you up at night? How is it affecting your life? And here with me is Dr. Moira Junger, health psychologist and chief health officer at the Sleep Health Foundation. Moira, welcome back to Life Matters.
Good morning, Tegan. Good to speak to you again.
So this study's looked at the sleep health of people over 50. What did it find?
Yeah, well, it was a big study drawn from two cohort studies of several thousand people in them. And they've got a new metric, which is new to me, this whole, they're calling it the working life expectancy, the WLE, which is kind of good from my point of view. I think great, because they're using, we've always known about, you know, health expectancy, life expectancy, et cetera. Now they're actually using sleep disturbance as a predictor of working life expectancy. And they found that what we've known for a long time, like a few decades now, that severe sleep disturbance, like very little sleep, like less than an average of 6 hours, or very long sleep duration on average, like more than 12 hours on average, is associated with poorer health outcomes. But now the researchers are able to frame it in this new metric, as I said, the WLE, and they found that a significant reduction in working life expectancy compared in those people who had these really wide-ranging, very poor sleep or very little or very long sleep, compared to people with no sleep disturbances or really mid-range sleep duration.
That kind of makes sense, right? Maybe you're sleeping a really, really long time because you have a sleep disorder or you're sick in some way, or maybe you've got really poor sleep and you're feeling foggy and you can't concentrate at work. It's sort of not as much of a surprise as you might think.
Exactly. It's not, but what's the surprise or what's the good part about it is that they're actually specifically targeting sleep disturbance rather than and specifically your ability to stay in the workplace, because what it's building on what we've known for a little while now too is that this midlife range of people who are working, people who say 50 to 65, the health that they have, and now specifically we can actually have even more evidence to say, look, get your sleep optimal for you. It doesn't have to be perfect, but get your sleep sorted. If it's really, really, really debilitating, don't put up with it, because not only is it going to maybe keep you might have to retire early, and that's all sorts of problems for yourself and your workplace, but you'll reduce in your later years, you'll have a reduced risk of chronic conditions, so heart health, lung health, dementia, obesity, type 2 diabetes and the like. So it's actually a really important piece of work for those listening who are still working and those people who work in like occupational health and safety, for instance, and bringing into the workplace really good discussions around like, what's your sleep? Asking about your sleep, what's it like? Do you know that you can get it sorted? Because there's a lot of people who don't even know there's a sleep field, believe it or not, like, that people know there's sleep school for babies, but they don't know that there are sleep experts out there. They don't know of the Sleep Health Foundation, for instance, and our good resources. So it's important piece of research that we can now really harness for public awareness.
What kind of things are affecting people's sleep in midlife?
Well, our study from this year, the sort of Aussie sleep snapshots that was released in August.
Snapshots.
That would have been good though. Every year we find that stress and worry and unbalanced workloads is the number one factor of keeping Australians awake at night, their self-report at least. So we know that that's a problem. We know that people carrying weight, having aches and pains, having increased risk of snoring, unbalanced or, you know, misuse of alcohol and other drugs, unbalanced amounts of caffeine, hormonal disruption. And they think that we all know about the sandwich generation, of course, of people in their midlife who've got often still dependent children and increased caring responsibilities for elderly parents, and increase work responsibilities, more senior roles, et cetera. So there's a lot of what we call the midlife collision, that there's not only the health, sort of your health deteriorates to some extent. I mean, you know, even look at your hair and your wrinkles, and there's a I don't like to call it deterioration. I just call it like it's a change. But what you say, your health is different to what it was when you were, say, 15. And you think about your sprinting across 100 metres when you were 15 and you're sprinting across 100 metres when you were 50s is different. And it's not necessarily a really bad thing, but there's a significant change. And our sleep is the same. It's just not as good as it used to be for most people.
So you mentioned the sandwich generation. Well, here with us is Sarah McDonald, host of the Club Sandwich podcast, all about finding yourself in this midlife squish. Sarah, you're sandwiched between caring for your elderly mum, your kids still live at home. How is your sleep?
It's not great.
The laugh says
it's
everything.
It's not great. It's not great. And I wonder whether I should sort of get one of those wearables and do it. But I actually did a sleep test recently where they attach all these electrodes to you. And unfortunately, I did it after I'd done a meditation weekend, which I thought would help my sleep. And so I had the best night's sleep I've had in about 15 years when I was attached. And I haven't got the results yet, but I think they're going to be okay. But I haven't slept well since.
Interesting. You got all your good sleep out, or it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. What do you reckon's going on, Sarah?
I said that to them. I said, did you put some, you know, sleeping tablets on those electrodes that seep through my skin? I think it was the meditation weekend. I mean, you talking about the sandwich generation there, I think 9 out of 10 feel burnout at some stage. And I think a report by Australian Seniors said 46% of us have sleep disturbances. And it's that constant whirring of your brain when you've got so many responsibilities going on at once. I must say I sleep a little bit better now since my mum's moved into aged care, because before she sold her home, every time it rained, I would sit bolt upright in bed and panic because my mum's roof used to leak occasionally. And I still wake up when it's heavy raining and I go, and then I go, oh no, it's okay, she's safe. So I'm going back to sleep easier now I know that she's in a safe place and she's being looked after than I did before. So I think it's that churning worry on our brain a lot.
Yeah, that really speaks to that kind of anxiety, that never switching off brain that a lot of people with a lot of responsibilities can relate to. I want to say women, but I'm sure there's plenty of men who find themselves in that place as well.
Yeah, there are. And I don't know, I shouldn't kind of gender sleep, but, you know, my husband goes good night and gets to sleep in about 8. Like, I swear to God, his head is still in the air and he's asleep and I'll lie there for an hour. So it is kind of frustrating that women tend to not sleep as well. I'm one of those people, I take a long time to go to sleep, like about an hour, hour and a half. And since I was probably in the sandwich generation, which has been 15 years now, but for the last 15 years, I would say I wake up a lot more often. And it's also when you have teenagers and they're out driving, you'll wake up when they come home. Oh, good, check they're home. So you are sleeping, but it's not a deep, restful sleep that you need when you've got so much going on, I feel.
We mentioned gender and sleep. Well, at least on the text line, there are some boys telling us that they're not sleeping great either, if that makes you feel any better, Sarah.
Brian, no, it doesn't. I don't want to share this.
Brian says, I'm now 67. I've noticed that in later years, I'm often awake for extended periods after getting up for a pee during the night. I don't worry about it too much because I figure that at least I'm still resting. I find deep breathing exercises and counting backwards from 1,000 by sevens to be helpful strategies for getting back to sleep. Brian, you're stressing me out. I don't know if I could actually do that. Dean says, I'm 64 and since about 60, I found it hard to sleep all night, say 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. I have to go to bed at midnight, but often wake 3 or 5 a.m. and then get an hour's sleep, which makes you feel terrible when you get up. Moira, it does sound like there's a pattern happening here. How much of this is sort of normal and don't worry about it? And how much of it is stuff that you can kind of go, there are interventions for this?
Yeah, really important. And first of all, too, that women are twice as likely to report insomnia. So it's not just Sarah, you know, trying to genderize it. It's the facts speak for themselves, too, that it's disproportionately women saying that they're not sleeping well. And I think it's important that, because there is a bit of, you know, like we're not going to be as good with our sleep as we were when we're younger, but it's really important to, I think the bottom line would be how you're coping during the day with your occupational functioning and your social functioning. So basically your quality of life, like, are you able to function still?
or are you having like unintentional naps, like really like falling asleep when you don't want to, particularly on the roads, but even in, like those sorts of things are like, if someone's had a near miss with that, that is not, that means you're really actually not having enough sleep. And you need to fairly urgently explore, you know, have that assessed. So I think talking to your GP, looking at the symptoms, because some people think, well, I don't know if I've got sleep apnea. I don't know what's normal limits of things. So Sleep Health Foundation website at the very start, you can go in and actually look at your, like a symptom checker. You can actually, so that's a really important thing people have access to. Or speak to your GP, or ask, even in remote parts of Australia, ask for a referral to like a telehealth for a person who's qualified as a medical sleep expert to actually get your sleep assessed. Most people won't need to do that. Most people can actually have a good idea of what's causing their sleep disturbance. And in someone like Sarah, who's got all these collisions going on, and myself included, to actually try and see if you can manage it. Like, and I manage it with keeping the rest of my life as healthy as I can. Like, I try and, you know, try as much as possible to be as healthy as I can. When I have sleep disturbance, I'm really good at catching, you know, having naps. I'm really good at trying not to panic about the poor nights I have. There's a whole lot of strategies that you can see on the Sleep Health Foundation website about that, about managing insomnia, et cetera, and knowing when to go to the doctor or not. Mm. So I think they're really important ones, because it's my job is to have this sleep health awareness, but also not triggering too much panic in people. And because it's really hard to know what's normal, isn't it? It's hard to know what should I put up with and what shouldn't I. But if you were walking around with a really sore ankle, like you could barely walk, and you didn't know there were physiotherapists or other things that could help, then I think that's the same with the sleep. If it's quite debilitating and really affecting your quality of life, please don't put up with it.
Moira, is there some sort of like low-hanging fruit of things that you find people often maybe get wrong, or that often have like a big return on investment?
Yes, a really good return on investment is to know that waking is normal. So to like we all wake all through the night and go through different stages of light and deep sleep or wake period. So try to reduce the temptation of looking at the clock. So take away the clock, take away the phone in the bedroom is a really good value for money kind of intervention. And not aiming for 8 hours, not aiming for the person before that said I don't sleep from 11 till 7 or whatever it was. It's like either do I. I think knowing that we aim for 7 to 9 hours, but 6 to 10 is normal, and also you don't have to get it in one block. Maybe if you got 6 hours and then had a couple of half hour naps, if you're really debilitated, if you had the time, that would be really healthy sleep still. So those sorts of things, I think in a nutshell, are one of the best things. And of course the usual around, you know, alcohol, caffeine, trying to sort of manage what you're putting into your mouth as well, and the biggest one is managing workload, managing stress wherever possible, which is, I know it's really easy to say and not to do, but understanding what's affecting your sleep will be the best thing, because people might go into melatonin or magnesium or all sorts of things, but that may not be the root cause. So it's trying to address the root cause in your own mind. You're the person who's pretty expert in your life. What do you think is going on? Trying to address it on your own first, and then seeking some professional help.
I'm loving the text that you're sending me as well. Caroline says, I no longer have a problem with getting to sleep after discovering podcasts that are interesting enough but not too interesting. For example, astronomy podcasts. All the astronomy nerds out there crying at Caroline's backhanded compliment there. Another says, sleep expectations should self-adjust as we age. Early morning wakefulness is my creative zone. Clarity, inspiration, and imagination occur, followed by meditation, and finally sleep. Another says, my first yoga teacher always suggested that we need to release the day. So this is on the floor, not the bed. Review the day and let go of the things, achievements, etc. Acknowledge the good and the not so good, but let it go. Give yourself a pat on the back, then go to bed. Well, a pat on the back for both of you, Moira and Sarah. May you both have a great night's sleep tonight. Dr. Moira Junger is Chief Health Officer for the Sleep Health Foundation. Sarah McDonald is the host of the Club Sandwich podcast. And as it turns out, I've been talking a lot about sleep recently. If you liked this chat, scroll back through the Life Matters feed. Last Wednesday, I spoke to an evolutionary biologist about sleep in humans. It was fascinating. And my other podcast that you may know about is called What's That Rash? We did an episode on sleep all about smell and sleep, with a very weird hack on how to get back to sleep if you wake in the middle of the night. I'm actually not going to give you any more spoilers. Go and listen to that. Search for Watch That, What's That Rash on ABC Listen for that one.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.